Hello and welcome to another episode of Inspiration from Zion. I'm Jonathan Feldstein, and I have the privilege of being your host, coming to you from the Judean Mountains here in Israel. I like to refer to it as the original Bible Belt. Inspiration from Zion is a program of the Genesis 123 Foundation, whose mission is to build bridges between Jews and Christians with Israel in ways that are new, unique, and meaningful. I pray that you will find this all of those. Through this program, we're excited to connect you to people and stories in and relating to Israel to give you a window to look through, experiencing aspects of life here that you might not otherwise know about. We want this to be interactive, so please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com and send along any questions and any comments about any topic anytime. Or you can reach us at genesis123.co and follow and like Inspiration from Zion on Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. Stay tuned until the end, where, as always, we offer an exciting opportunity, and please do feel free to share this with others who will also find it of interest. I think I can count on one hand, in 202 episodes of Inspiration from Zion as a podcast, and many more as a webinar series, which is how we're having this conversation today, the number of times that I've been the sole guest. Normally, I would be introducing my guests and the topic, and I could have had many today, but this was put together, this conversation, in about 36 hours, and with Shabbat in the middle, Shabbat just ending here in Israel 2 hours ago, it was a little hard to figure out who would be the best, broadest panel, but also I think we're all going to be discussing more or less the same things. And what I wanted to do today, and the topic of this is peace breaking out in the Middle East? You know, we talk about war breaking out. 2 years ago, this week, war broke out again. I sometimes, when I'm thinking clearly, I don't refer to what we've been through as a war, but a battle. I grew up in Princeton, New Jersey. Princeton, New Jersey was the site of the Battle of Princeton in the Revolutionary War. A little further south was the Battle of Trenton and other battles that have taken place. But it was all the same war. And unfortunately, my general belief is that we are in the midst of, we're still in the midst of the War of Independence from 77 and a half years ago, 78 years ago. And what we've been living through is just a battle. It's been the longest battle in the war since October 7th of 2023. I like to have as many people join as possible live, because I think that helps make these more interactive. I surely would never be sitting in front of a camera and giving a lecture for half an hour, 45 minutes, or an hour. That's not my thing. I want this to be interactive, as I said in the outset. So I'm really thrilled that there are a bunch of people who have made it on live today, are joining as a webinar. If you're listening to this afterward and don't get our emails about the live webinars, please be in touch. And let me put you on the mailing list so you can then be invited for these conversations. And then also the audio will become part of our podcast. As I said, the podcast is now, we've now exceeded 200 episodes. I'm really proud of that. I'm the only Orthodox Jew with a weekly program on the Charisma podcast network about and from Israel. So I'm really grateful for that privilege and opportunity. And I'm very excited about all of you joining here today. So I want to welcome you all and jump into some topics that I prepared, but there were some great questions, and that's why I also like to do these the conversations as a webinar. Some of it, I hope most of what I'm going to share, except for some of you who I know really truly have a hand on the pulse of a lot of news that's going on. But some of the things, and I'll get into some personal things, there's some things that I've learned that I just can't share, but they're very personal and it's real. And hopefully I'll be able to share some of those in the coming days, et cetera. But as my provocative title of this conversation is Peace Breaking Out, it's a rhetorical question. The short answer is no. We are not seeing peace, at best, from this agreement, which has been signed, and we are now a full 20, or maybe 30 hours or more into since when the agreement was penned and agreed to with all of the relevant parties. At best, this will be a ceasefire. This will be a release of the 48 remaining hostages, of whom about 20 are believed to be alive, and a cessation of hostility, violence, well, war, I would say, combat in Gaza specifically. But I want to get into a wide range of things, and there's so many things that I know I won't forget remember everything. So that's, again, why I'm inviting you all to use the Q&A feature. First thing, it seems like the deal is happening. One of the uneasy things about going off, I value Shabbat. I love it. I can't wait to shut off my phone and the computer and unplug from all of the media and the buzz every Friday evening here in Israel. And when I'm traveling, I love to do Shabbat with Christian friends. And if we haven't done that yet, please be in touch. So maybe we can in the future. But one of the unnerving things is closing the phone, shutting off the TVs, closing your computer. You're completely unaware of what's going on. And being in a largely modern Orthodox community like I live in, while people do have their phones for security reasons, we're not checking news. So I was very anxious until Shabbat ended to get the news. The bottom line is right now it does appear the deal is still happening. It's been signed. It has not been abrogated. President Trump is arriving in Israel Monday morning about 9 o'clock. And current reports are that he'll be staying only for about several hours and be flying out before the holiday begins here again on Monday evening. He's scheduled to address the Knesset, the parliament, and then basically fly back. One of the interesting things that when it was announced that he might be coming here, I think certainly in the past 2 years, and maybe with 1 year or 2 years exception since COVID, we're seeing a great peak in tourism this holiday season. And so as soon as it was announced that Trump was coming, I thought, oh my goodness, some hotel, the King David or the Waldorf or the David Citadel or one of these luxurious five-star hotels that has a suitable facility for the President of the United States, it's going to have to be emptied out completely of all its guests. I don't know what's happened. I heard a rumor that two floors at the King David have been cleared out, and maybe the president will use that to take a shower, to rest, to have his own private meetings. I don't know, but we're expecting major traffic jams here. It's expected he'll speak to the Knesset. It's planned that he'll speak to the Knesset. It's expected that to some degree he will have an opportunity to meet, if not the hostages being released. That was a big topic of conversation over our Shabbat lunch today, if that's even appropriate. These people have been in captivity for almost 740 days. And I personally don't think that's appropriate, but he will maybe meet with some other families. It's hard to say. But it appears, according to the terms of this agreement, by the time he arrives, according to the agreement, all hostages are supposed to had been released, because they were supposed to have been released within 72 hours of the signing of the agreement. That will be when the president's here. That will be by noon on Monday. The question is, we don't know if that's really happening. Hamas is claiming that they don't know where all the bodies are. Very candidly, if I haven't said this on a conversation that you've been part of with me previously or read it in any of my articles, and someone commented, I had a journalist from Sweden here yesterday interviewing me, and he was commenting on the number of articles I've written since the war, since October 7th of 23. I've written more than 200 articles about what's going on here. And I thought tonight, well, maybe I'll stop. I just sent another one for publication, which will hopefully be out tomorrow. And but I've said almost from the beginning that we'll never see, I don't believe we'll ever see all of the bodies, all of the live hostages. Hamas has very little incentive to do it. And as they've done in the past, they can play us and the world as fools because, A, they are lying Islamic terrorists, who, by the way, you know, many of you asked the question, can we trust? The answer is no. We can trust them to lie, to manipulate, to exert every level of psychological warfare in this process as well. For those of you who don't know, when if you remember the B-Bus boys, who were the youngest two people kidnapped, they were killed. They were not a victim of an Israeli bombing as they tried to project it, but they were actually strangled to death, these two little redhead boys, as well as their mother. When their bodies were released earlier this year, the body of Shiri Bibas, the mother, was held back, and they put a body of some Arab woman in the coffin that was sent back. So any amount of psychological warfare can be expected. There is, as part of this agreement, some kind of team of Jordanian, Egyptian, and maybe Turkish, I don't know who, are supposed to set up a task force to come into Gaza to help find bodies that can't be found. I'm not so optimistic on that, but there's a contradiction right there. If at the beginning we're supposed to get all the bodies and live hostages back within 72 hours, and yet there's a task force set up to try to find bodies that can't be found, I think it's intuitive that we're not going to be seeing all of the bodies. As part of this arrangement, this deal, Israel is scheduled to release about 2,000 terrorists, about 1,700 of whom were captured and arrested since October 7th of 23, excuse me, and about 250 of whom are people who have been in prison for extended periods of time, and if I'm understanding it correctly, are all serving life sentences. Now, this is very significant because Israel has always said, although in recent years, that we would not release terrorists with blood on their hands. These are people who are serving one to multiple life sentences. Apparently, according to Israeli statements, we are not going to be releasing four of the most senior terrorists who are currently being held in Israeli prisons. One of whom, Omar Barghouti, is serving five consecutive life sentences plus another 100 years, I think. And if I'm not mistaken, another one of the terrorists that Hamas once released is serving something like 45 life sentences. These people are not going to be released, but for 250 who actually have life sentences, one of the things that we have to consider as to what's going to be happening here in Israel, while most people, the vast majority of Israelis, are exuberant about the possibility of all the hostages finally being released and those who are alive hopefully having some kind of recovery and healing, which will take a very long time, and those who know in advance that they're receiving the remains of their loved ones, they will begin to have closure. But for the families of those whose loved ones were killed by the 250 terrorists who will be released, this rips open wounds that maybe never have healed. And we hear that many of the Israelis whose families are the victims of the terrorists who are being released understand that this may need to happen, as sick and horrific as it is. But that won't mitigate the trauma. And where I am, and I hosted a bunch of journalists recently in a group, a Christian group from China, here in my home, in my sukkah this week. When you look at it and you realize the terrorists are not just being released, but released back into their communities here in Judea and Samaria, where I live, where they have free access, or even in Jerusalem. I don't know where they're all from. But if someone, think about this, folks, if someone's being released in Jerusalem, it means that they can take a bus to the central bus station or the main train station and take a bus or train across Israel to anywhere and commit an act of terror anywhere. What we do know is that they are being released, but they are not reformed. And someone, it relates to a question that somebody asked. You'll forgive me that I didn't write down all of who wrote the really great questions that I want to try and address. But in according to previous release of terrorists, 82% have returned to commit more terrorist acts. So unfortunately, we're looking at the, I want to say probability, but I don't even think that's word, the certainty that terrorists are being released who will try to commit terror acts. And one thing that I just need to underscore for many of you, it's something that you already know. The mastermind of the October 7th attack and massacre was Yahya Sinwar, who was released in 2014, if I'm not mistaken. 1,027 Palestinian Arab terrorists in exchange for one Israeli soldier who had been kidnapped and held hostage for 5 years. I think all people recognize that that was a deal. It would be a deal that would be very hard to make now. And some people have observed, as hard as this deal is, it's the lowest prisoner, terrorist prisoner to hostage ratio that Hamas has ever agreed to. So that's something that, for those of us who need some kind of comfort to hang our hats on or spin, that's at least a comfort. But it's uneasy. We've kicked the can down the road, and I speak about my children, my youngest son who's doing his compulsory 3-year service, my oldest son, who those of you who have followed before know that on October 7th, 2 years ago, he was called up as a newlywed. He was married for three months and 5 days. And he went back into reserves for 3 months this week, this past week, as a new father, as a father of a 5-week-old. So they get in and out. But my sons-in-law, and I believe even my grandchildren, will be dealing with this for the rest of their lives, because let's remember, this is not a peace agreement. This is a ceasefire with a terrorist Islamic organization that has as its goal to obliterate us. And we haven't eliminated all of the terrorists, and we haven't eliminated the ideology behind them. And I want to come back to that. Something that's fascinating that makes me super proud as an Israeli, for the last, I suppose, 2 days, even before, maybe 3 days, since the agreement was discussed and released before the government approved it, is the amount of work that's going in to prepare for the receiving of the hostages back. There are several hospitals, for example, that have been set up with wards, each of which can have the capacity for almost all of the living hostages. But the point being is that we don't know what medical conditions they will be in. So that's, what's the word? The medical word, triage. So in a sense, as soon as the hostages are released, they have to do a kind of triage to see who's in what condition and where they need to go. There is something that's interesting that's happening, supposedly, that's happening this time that's different, is that because they're all meant to be released more or less at the same time, and hopefully, truly, without the obscene ceremonies, the handover ceremonies in which the Red Cross was complicit for all the previous releases of hostages that Hamas orchestrated. This is not supposed to happen, although I'll be surprised if something like it doesn't take place. The families of the living hostages are being told, I believe, that they're going to have an opportunity to see their loved ones somewhere on the Israeli side of the Gaza border. So that means all of the hostages will be brought to one place before being presumably airlifted to the hospitals. But we were even talking, I don't know if anyone here is a medical professional and you have any insight that you'd like to put into the Q&A or maybe come on live, but the scenes that we've seen of the emaciated hostages, literally living death, like Holocaust victims. We wondered today and yesterday in our Shabbat meals, can these people even withstand a helicopter flight? It's not changing atmosphere. It's not going up 30 or 40,000 feet, but it that something like that could really trigger the body. So these wars are being prepared, not just for physical, but for psychological. And they're being prepared so they don't look like hospitals, but like homes. And they're being prepared so the loved ones can stay and be with their family members who have been released, assuming that all goes forward. This year, you can join Christian leaders from around the world who are lining up to participate in Root and Branch, the newest hands-on, meaningful, and incredibly tangible way for Christians to make a personal connection to Israel, the Israeli people, and to be a blessing to the people and nation which is still suffering from the trauma of a horrific terrorist attack and war. Root and Branch offers unique comfort and a vision of peace, with tangible material benefits to Israelis who have suffered the trauma of war, specifically in and around the Gaza border area. Root and Branch is a unique agricultural pilgrimage. You will harvest wild olive trees in communities along the Gaza border that were devastated by the October 7, 2023 terrorist attack and massacre. In these communities and elsewhere, we will plant deep and lasting roots among Israelis of all backgrounds, making Root and Branch all the more innovative. Since the war began, more than $50 million in crops have been saved by volunteers. Root and Branch is the first such initiative to harvest olives. Proceeds from the olive oil that's being made will directly benefit these devastated communities, making Root and Branch a critical and significant project to bless Israel economically and spiritually in multiple ways. Root and Branch is a partnership between the Genesis 123 Foundation and NewPersia.org. For information, videos, and media about the experience, dates, pricing, and how you can register, please visit rootandbranchisrael.com. But nobody knows what's going to happen. I'll share something also very grim. In the lead up to this negotiation, there were reports that I heard, I'm not making stuff up, that Israel sent a message to Hamas through the Red Cross not to overfeed the hostages in an attempt in the few days to cover up the starvation that they've been subject to for 2 years, because overfeeding somebody, as we know from the Holocaust, and I don't know if there are other examples of such levels of starvation in human history, where people who have been starved for such a long period of time overate and then their bodies crashed and they died as a result of overeating. So even that is something that's being taken into consideration. And I don't know what kind of facility is going to accommodate the forensics, on the assumption that all of the dead hostages, presumably 28, the remains, are coming out more or less at the same time. But they're going to have to do DNA testing to identify what remains they're dealing with, if the remains are all of the same one person or multiple people. Is Hamas going to be sending remains of non-hostages but their own victims? Let's remember also that some of the hostages are not only not Israeli, but they're not Jewish, foreign nationals. So getting DNA, hopefully we still have we already have the DNA samples, for instance, from the Tanzanian agricultural student, Joshua Molel, I think is his last name. This is going to be a Herculean thing. And I suspect, because it's been done before, that there will be autopsies. I don't know what's left to determine the cause of death. That may or may not be evident. And there are ways to cover that up, as they've tried to do in the past. But yes, of course, entire hospital wards are ready to receive the 20 living hostages. But even something that maybe no one's ever done before, I don't know. It's a very interesting question. Israel's experiencing euphoria. As we speak right now, there's a massive rally taking place in what's been known the last 2 years as Hostage Square in Tel Aviv. Perhaps one of the biggest such demonstrations in more cases than ever before. A prayer vigil that this will actually come to fruition. Steve Witkoff is apparently there and getting ready, or maybe is in the midst of making remarks. I'll see that as we all can afterward. There is tremendous euphoria around Israel, rightly so. This is one of the main goals of the war, and there again, the combat. And I can't tell you the number of times, and I don't mean that rhetorically, I literally can't tell you the number of times that in all of my visiting and bringing supplies to soldiers on the Gaza border, and I've been there many times, and the northern border, especially the first winter when we gave away 1,500 winter jackets to reservists who didn't have warm coats. And by the way, reservists who are still going to be there, and we need your support for the soldiers. They're not leaving their positions in the north or in the south. And as winter comes, there are still many needs that are going to be required. The number of times soldiers said that they were in this until every single hostage came out. And one fascinating experience, it was July 4th weekend this past year. We had the privilege, if you don't know about it, feel free to email me afterward and I can send you the materials that we prepared. We had the unique privilege of making a barbecue on one of Israel's most elite and secretive Air Force bases for pilots who participated in the 12-day war with Iran. And I met a pilot who's older than I am, who said to me, I looked at him, I said, come on, what are you doing here? Really? He's 62 years old, or was in July. He said, I'm here. They can't kick me out. I'm here until every single hostage is released. That's been the spirit. But there's also tremendous caution. I'm terribly afraid that as we've seen manipulations, we've seen lies, we've seen deliberate things that have been done by Hamas and others to maximize the psychological terror that they've done deliberately. It's not just because there's a war. It's not just because there have been at the highest 251 hostages. And as of this week, yet another soldier who was killed by a sniper. Soldier who had already withdrawn to defensive lines, killed by a sniper. As horrible as that is, my immediate prayer when I saw his beautiful face, a 26-year-old reservist who was killed, that he would be the last one. But it's real hard just to be an optimist here. David Ben-Gurion said it in a different context as Israel's first prime minister. But in order to be in order to be an optimist in Israel, you have to believe in miracles. I believe in miracles, but I'm tremendously nervous, as are many of us. These are the topics of conversation that have been going around family homes on Shabbat, over the holiday, in the media. Again, some of you joining from the outset, no, this is not peace. This is at best an end of the current combat, if you want to call it a war, battle, operation. It may be the end of that. It will not. It is not peace. They are not the same thing. And not only can we not trust Hamas, but one of the things that's upset me, and I know many of you as well, maybe all of you, is that we put so much trust in Arab nations that are our immediate neighbors and in the neighborhood in general, Arab and Islamic nations. Qatar. No way. They're not. They're a country that lives by the ideology of the Muslim Brotherhood, and they are horrible. They control. They have funded Hamas. They are not reforming unless President Trump twists their arm. They are not reforming. Egypt, I'm terribly sad to say, Egypt, the country with which we've had a peace arrangement for the longest since 1979. The president of Egypt this year, most recent, as of just a few weeks ago, maybe a month ago, referred to Israel as the enemy for the first time since the Camp David Accord was signed. And they're building up troops against the Camp David Accord in Sinai, which is not allowed. Jordan, horrific. This king, Abdullah II, has a Palestinian Arab wife, and the things that they both said. Remember, we have peace with them since 1994. The things that they've said. Iran it doesn't even count. We can't trust them. Turkey, the president of Turkey came up over lunch today. He's horrible. He's an anti-Semite. He wants to reconstitute the Ottoman Empire and talks about reconquering Jerusalem. Somebody sitting at lunch with me today reminded me that's not all Turks. I don't know if that is or not, but I don't trust a country that is run by a leader who says such things. And I don't trust a country like Syria, where we've talked about since last month and a half, 2 months, possibly having some kind of security arrangement with Syria. The current president who won his presidency in a military coup, so he didn't win by any election, is a reformed terrorist leader who until earlier this year or late last year had a $5 or $10 million bounty on his head by the FBI or CIA. I don't know who. This is our neighborhood. And some of them are being tasked, according to this agreement, with being able to come in and help rebuild Gaza. I'm gonna speak about that and my thoughts on rebuilding Gaza. Many of you know we've had these conversations before. But the bottom line is we can't trust any of them. Hamas was armed to the teeth as they were because of all of these countries, because of the funding and the active support of at least Egyptians looking the other way. To let these weapons cross over and under their border and by sea. What will actually bring peace? I sound like a broken record. I can't get rid of it. God is a funny God. I wrote an article in December of 23 called "The Solution for Peace in Gaza is Jesus." I'm not going to go into the whole thing, but I invite you all, if you're not familiar, if you want your mind refreshed on that, go to solutionforpeaceingaza.com. It's never been more relevant. It's never been more appropriate. I'm looking for someone to take it over and run with it because God just downloaded this idea to me, Jonathan Feldstein, the Orthodox Israeli Jew, that I should be promoting a program where 100,000 to 200,000 Christians go in to be responsible for the rebuild of Gaza. If you look at the website, you'll notice there's a page, I think we call it "What World Leaders Are Thinking or Saying." Ultimately, and it's been said here ad nauseum just in the last week, ultimately, if we've defeated Hamas leaders, which we have, many of them, not all of them, not just in Gaza, thank God, but also in Iran, and unfortunately our attack in Qatar was not as successful as it appears that it should have been, we haven't defeated the ideology. We are seeing right now, as of when I came online after Shabbat, we are seeing violent uprisings taking place in Gaza against Hamas. That's optimistic. That's very optimistic. I hope that that will continue. But the violent uprisings by armed people who are Islamists, who have been indoctrinated for 100 years and did not suddenly decide that they love Israel and want peace with Israel, and in fact believe in a two-state solution, which I'm not advocating for. I'm just saying that the funny thing is Hamas always has been clear that they don't want a two-state solution. They want to eradicate the Jewish state, and they want to create a Palestinian state from the river to the sea. That's in place of Israel, not alongside Israel. So I'm not seeing that yet, but I do believe solutionforpeaceingaza.com is not just the best, but the only possibility to reform, to change their hearts so they realize that their God, Allah, has failed them, that this ideology that they've been indoctrinated with for at least 100 years, and I say that generously, it may be just a core of Islam, but 100, the milestone why I say 100 years, it's not quite, technically it's 95 or 96 years since the inauguration of the Muslim Brotherhood, but we can round up. I learned that principle in elementary school math, I think. We can still call it a century. It's a century of hate, a century of indoctrination, and a century that requires an undoing of the ideology before we can actually even think about using the term peace. Israel needs a tremendous amount of healing. I started making a list. We need healing physically. The people who have been impacted, the country. There are still communities along the Gaza border and the northern border with Lebanon that are devastated, that have been largely destroyed or heavily destroyed, and to which people have not yet come back to live in. We need emotional healing. I think on that level, the healing will never be that we are all healed. I think we will just be in a more stable place. Certainly that will be for the rest of my lifetime. I believe that will be as well in the lifetime of my grandchildren, the youngest two of whom don't really even know what's going on. They're 5 weeks and 13 months respectively. But they will grow up in this emotionally fraught environment of the trauma that we may now begin to be able to call post-trauma. But until this point, we've been living in present trauma stress disorder. Economically, I can tell you honestly, friends, this is not an appeal for me, for my pocketbook personally. Prices have gone up here ridiculously. Israelis are going to be footing the bill. Remind me, I actually have to write an article about that. I believe that part of the Gaza reconstruction needs, since much of the project items that need to come through, I think it will come through Israel. I hope that Israel will impose a tariff. Tariffs are very popular now and very legitimate. And anything that passes through an Israeli port, I just thought of this over Shabbat, should be hit with a tariff that goes to the economic rebuilding, because we're not even close to seeing the economic impact as a result of this war. And that's going to be very stressful on a lot of levels. Nationally, as a people, you probably know 2 years ago, before October 7th, we were very divided nationally, politically. Politically, we need that healing too, very much so. I hope that we can begin to have that healing. And I hope that through this trauma that we've been through as a country, we can come out stronger together. But that's also a challenging thing. Spiritually, you know, many Israelis have turned to their faith, turned to a Jewish observance in a much more significant way, recognizing the miracles that have taken place over the last 2 years. And that even though it's been ridiculously difficult, God still has our back. And many more people are turning to God. And I would say politically, I wrote this in an article that was published widely this week. I think that we will be seeing elections sooner than later, even though there's no date called, and even though the government has not yet fallen. I think this is going to be the beginning of the 2026 election campaign that we were planning anyway. Anyway, a year from now, there was going to be an election. I think it's very reasonable to assume. I'm not a prophet and I don't make projections specifically, but I think it's reasonable to assume that we might have an election for a lot of reasons, and I'm happy to get into that more, as early as the end of the winter, beginning of the spring. Last couple of observations, then I want to answer your questions, and I see people are putting in comments and questions that I haven't had a chance to look at, but I will. The healing that we need was a terrible, I just want to cry over the whole thought of it. Shabbat ended and I put on my phone and flipped through all the news sources that I typically go to. One of the news items that really breaks my heart is the suicide of a survivor of the Nova Music Festival. So 2 years ago, this young man survived, but he witnessed I believe it was his girlfriend, killed before his eyes. And somehow we have to assume that what's happening now triggered something that he was unable to control and he took his own life. I pray that that won't happen anymore. I pray that we can all come into this healing, and there's a lot of healing that's needed.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. that this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
The aftermath globally, the people who have been yelling that we're committing a genocide and ethnic cleansing and war crimes, and the acceptance of anti-Semitism. I don't believe we're seeing more anti-Semitism. I believe anti-Semitism has always been there. It's just being more proliferated because it's more acceptable now. Sorry to say it, I don't believe that any of that's going back in the bottle. You can't shove the genie back into the bottle on these things. I'm curious if the International Criminal Court and the International Court of Justice will withdraw their cases against Israel. There never was a genocide against the Palestinian Arabs or ethnic cleansing. Did individual soldiers do things that might be war crimes? That may have happened, but that wasn't a national thing. Never was, never will be. And the anti-Semitism that's causing Jews to fear living in places where Jews have thrived for centuries is very sad. I don't see it all going back into the bottle. So in terms of, some people have asked how to pray, we need to pray that all of that will go away. In some capacity, a reformed Palestinian Authority is supposed to have governing opportunity or place in a rebuilt Gaza. The Palestinian Authority is only better because they didn't commit the atrocity of October 7th, but the Palestinian Authority is a weak kleptocracy headed by a man who's in his 20th year of a four-year term. Think about that, okay? If you haven't heard this statistic, he was elected to a four-year term 20 years ago. He's still serving. There is no democracy. Most Palestinian Arabs loathe the Palestinian Authority. And if there were to be an election, Hamas would probably still win. By the way, I have to say, I neglected to say it, I wrote it in my article this week. I hope this is interesting, folks. I'm rambling, kind of stream of consciousness. I hope you're taking away some points. The deal that we're talking about, which we've determined already, we agree upon, is not peace, also only applies to Gaza. It doesn't apply to Judea and Samaria, where I live. It doesn't apply to the rest of the world. It doesn't apply to reforming the governments and countries that have incited terror, funded terror, provided the weapons that have enabled the terrorists all these years, and the propaganda that goes behind it. The Palestinian Authority is bad and weak. And some of us have projected here in Israel that there's going to be an increase in terrorism. We've seen a little spike. I don't know if there's a big increase, but there's a lot more security needs here right now as a result. I believe that Hamas is going to bide its time. And in the Arab villages and cities near where I live, where they have a dominant influence, they're just going to bide their time and wait for Mahmoud Abbas, the chairman or president of the Palestinian Authority, to die. He's almost 90 years old. And then there'll be a revolution, a bloody revolution among them. Which, by the way, is very funny when they talk about, when these nasty Western countries have now all recognized a Palestinian state, but they say that Hamas can't be part of it. You can't have it both ways. You can't say you're going to have a Palestinian state and maybe you'll actually have elections, but Hamas can't be part of it. If 82% of Palestinian Arabs vote for Hamas, Hamas will be part of it. So that's kind of a bubble that is important to burst and make known to the world. I think the last point that I want to make, and then I want to come to your questions, those that I printed and those that you've posted here now. The last point I want to make is that to the extent that there is a deal, it can be broken at any moment. It could be broken where the terms of the deal by noon on Monday, if that's the correct calculation of the 72 hours that Hamas has to release all of the hostages, if they don't, and then what happens? I believe Israel has withdrawn to the what's now called the yellow line, the defensive positions that we're in. I believe that we're going to implement our side of it unless and until they violate theirs. But then the question is, will the world, much less President Trump or anyone else, tolerate our responding appropriately and accordingly? President Trump deserves a lot of gratitude. The front cover of the Jerusalem Post yesterday had a picture of the shape of Trump's profile with all of the hostages' pictures in, saying, "Thank you, President Trump." Clearly, he gets a lot of credit. Netanyahu as well for being part of this. Netanyahu, I'm very conflicted over, and that goes into a much deeper political conversation that I don't want to get into at the moment. But the people who are the heroes are the soldiers who have sacrificed themselves, not just their lives, people who spent days, months on end, much of the last 736 days, I think we're up to 37 days, in reserves, almost 1,000 of whom have been killed since October 7th of 23. Their families who've lost their loved ones have borne this brunt, but the families like my kids, like my daughter-in-law and my new grandson, and my daughter and my four grandsons, and I don't elevate them over anyone else. I'm just using them as personal examples. And us, and my wife and I, knowing when your kids are going into combat, it's not easy. It's not easy. You lose sleep and you don't know how to deal with it. If it wasn't for them, if it wasn't for the military pressure, if it wasn't for the general success of the military, including the attack on the Hamas members in Qatar recently, I don't know that we would be in a place to be looking at this deal. I do want to go into your questions. I hope that's been helpful. There were several that I printed and I just want to roll through quickly, and then I want to get through any of yours, and I continue to invite you all to post your questions in the Q&A. Give me your feedback. I'd love to know what you think. So I was sure who asked this question. Thank you. How likely is it that God approves of a deal with a sworn enemy? I've already said I'm not a prophet. I don't have a direct line to God any more than anyone else. I'll say this. My first visceral response to that was, God has our back, and we've fought sworn enemies almost from the beginning. God didn't promise that he's going to make it easy and painless. And we've seen that in the last 2 years. Jewish tradition is that saving a life, we throw away all of the other biblical obligations that we have, except for two, in order to save a life. If this saves lives, albeit that it will risk lives, I hope God will provide that cover for the threatening parts. But it's a great question, and thank you for asking that one. Why do I think both parties agreed to the deal? Pressure, number one. A lot of pressure coming to a point from an Israeli perspective where perhaps, according to the rhetoric that we've heard over the most of the last 2 years, a full victory, a complete victory over Hamas. It's arguable if we've had a complete victory. I think people make that case. I don't think that that's true. But as some people have said, it's the best deal that we could get now. We shouldn't have to be in this position. And the imperative, the success of the Hamas psychological torture and terrorism on us by releasing videos of loved ones. And that's created a stir so that every Saturday night for most of the last 2 years, you've had thousands of people in Hostage Square in Tel Aviv whose primary purpose has been the release of the hostages. I believe that that's the case. Are Qatar, Egypt, Saudi Arabia, and Jordan legitimate partners for peace? Well, I don't know what that question means specifically, but as I alluded to already, I don't believe any of them can be truly trusted. They are our neighbors. Maybe as a result of this, maybe there's a side deal that the Saudis will normalize relationship with Israel. Maybe Indonesia, maybe other countries. They're the best peace partners we've got for whatever that's worth. When the hostages are freed, what will be done to still protect the citizens due to threats of other Islamic groups? Security will not be, we will not have our guard down for a very long time. And I say a very long time because it was 50 years ago to the day, within a day, of the attack and massacre 2 years ago that Israel was caught unprepared by a surprise attack in what became the Yom Kippur War. I don't plan that I'm going to live to 110 years old. And if I do, I don't know if I'll have the capacity to absorb the history and how we measure up 50 years from now. But I hope that we will never let our guard down as we made the mistake of doing 50 years from the Yom Kippur War, that we never have that complacency, even if there's an expansion of the Abraham Accords and broadening peace. Not in my lifetime, but it's a very good and important question. What will happen if all the hostages are not freed? That's anyone's guess. I'll say this. President Trump is not flying to Israel for several hours to be embarrassed. He won't be happy about it, but I don't know what green light or leeway he'll give, much less countries of the rest of the world. I don't know. It's a very good question. Maybe we won't be having that conversation. I don't know what will happen, but certainly that will be a violation of the terms. Does Gaza belong to Israel, and why consider another entity governing? The issue is less about Gaza belonging and who's inhabiting. I personally don't believe in the idea of expelling 2 million Palestinian Arabs from Gaza. I don't think it's realistic. I think it's not a good idea. I would like to use, according to our solution for peace in Gaza.com, I would like to see them become peaceful neighbors who embrace Israel and have the positive influence of 100,000 or 200,000 Christians to help them get to that point. There are many biblical examples of Gentiles living peacefully and prosperously amongst us. That's where I would like to see. Does Israel need to control? Will we have security control? Do we need to govern? And if we govern there with 1 million or 2 million, currently 2 million Palestinian Arabs, what does that mean? It's not. I'm not really for that. I'm not for the idea that we need to govern people who we don't want to be Israeli citizens, and I don't want them to be Israeli citizens. I would like them to be peaceful neighbors, and I would like to have you all join me on a bus to leave from my house on a Friday morning in the summer and drive an hour and a half to the beach in Gaza and go out for kosher burgers and pizza. Not together, because we don't mix milk and meat, but you get the idea. We cannot trust Hamas. That was a question. Someone asked a question which I didn't understand. Where are the terrorists that Israel released at the command of Hamas? I think the question is those who have gone back into active acts of terrorism. As I mentioned, Sinwar was the mastermind. He was released in the deal to free Gilad Shalit. And I also mentioned 82% of terrorists who have been released have gone back into engage further terrorist attacks, terrorist support. How can we trust the new managers of Gaza post-withdrawal and that they will not turn into another UNRWA riddled with anti-Israel terrorists? The short answer is we can't. And that's why there need to be, and that's why this deal is optimistic, but there's so many holes in it. Let me get to your questions that you've posted. John Rashko, what would I expect Israel's response to be if all 48 hostages are not released on Monday? I think our hands are tied for a little bit, John. Because they've already made claims that they don't know where all of the bodies of the dead hostages are. And Paul, Paul Lagno, yeah, excellent. Your point is correct. If all the hostages are not released, Israel does not release the terrorists. That should be intuitive. And I don't know legally how the terms of this agreement are, but that should be an answer. But if that continues, if they play games, and here's the thing, it's not only within 72 hours, the bodies, I don't know, is anyone here a medical professional? How long does it take to do DNA tests and an autopsy on what remains after 2 years? I don't know what remains after 2 years. Is it only bones? Is there flesh? I don't know. And I'm sorry to be so gross. I'm sorry to be so vivid, but we're all thinking about and talking about these things here. But yes, Paul, you're right. Intuitively, it's 72 hours to release them. But what about identifying them? How do we know that 10 of the 28 bodies are not someone else's bodies? Or they just say, oh, we can't find these three. Now it's your turn. But Paul, I think you're right that minimally should be should be that we don't release a single terrorist until we have all of them.
On October 7th, 2023, Israel and the Jewish people suffered a massacre and calamity of unprecedented proportion, the largest number of Jews killed in one day since the Holocaust. That this is even something that we even measure is harrowing. Since then, the Jewish people have never felt more alone, in Israel and around the world. It brings us back to when 6 million of us were murdered in the Holocaust, and few rose to protect us. However, those who did, the righteous among the nations, can never be forgotten. They serve as a beacon of light for us today and for future generations. Footsteps was born in the wake of this most recent calamity, to give you the opportunity to walk in the footsteps of the righteous among the nations, the righteous Gentiles. Footsteps is a boutique travel experience with a personal touch. You will experience stories of the righteous among the nations, their descendants, of the Jews they saved, and the generations that came from them. Through this, you'll be inspired to follow in their footsteps to inspire new generations of righteous among the nations, especially today when so much of the world is embracing overt anti-Semitism. In a generation where standing up for Israel and the Jewish people is no longer something to be taken for granted, stories of the righteous among the nations call out to us, inspire us, and are models for today and for our next generations. Please join us and get more information at genesis123.co.
George, your question or comment. For the life of me, I never have been able to understand why Israel exchanged dozens, if not hundreds, of terrorists for every Israeli hostage. Can you not learn from the mistake made when Sinwar was released and became the leader? Maybe we will learn, George. Maybe we will learn. Unfortunately, and I don't remember who asked this question, I've done so many media interviews just this past week and hosted Christian visitors here in our home and our sukkah. I don't know who asked the question, but why is this deal happening? Because Hamas was successful. successful, okay? For those of you not watching, in air quotes, successful in their horrific attack, and they did successfully take hostages. By the way, another terrible thing that we're all thinking of, and those of you who have been here, specifically where I live, and I invite you to come and be part of our Root and Branch program next year to harvest olives and come visit, or our Run for Zion program, or just come visit. There's very little reason to assume that the Palestinian Arabs won't use any opportunity they can to try to kidnap Israelis here in public spaces on the main road that's maybe a mile behind my head right now, the main north-south road that goes from Jerusalem to Hebron, or at the grocery store where Arabs and Jews shop and work together, or anywhere along the way. I hope we learn, Paul, George, and honestly, I would hope that we would employ the death penalty for terrorists. That also came up. Oh, that came up, the question. John Haller's here with your group. When I visited with your group the other day, someone asked the question. I would hope that we would create a clause that terrorists who have committed capital crimes at least should also be put to death. I don't know that that would be a disincentive for them to do more terrorism, but I'm not against that. Someone anonymous, as from now on, all Muslims must be made lowliest of lowly by all Christians, and Israel take all the powers and authority, give not even any little power to them, don't let them smell it. Okay. We agree that Islam is not eye to eye on anything relating to Judaism and Christianity. I hope that this defeat in Gaza, I don't celebrate the human suffering, the human loss. I don't celebrate that. But sometimes, well, actually all times, victory comes through defeat. Victory doesn't come through a negotiation. I hope that this defeat has been sufficient and that we can begin to see kernels of victory on our end. Maybe we can begin to talk about peace in a generation. Paul, all of Israel are hostages to the Islamic world, and as long as they know this works for them, it has to stop. Correct. That's correct. You can't trust the USA either. President Trump is a great disappointment. When he started to push for a two-state solution, it costs Israel every time. I agree with some of the sentiment that you've said. A lot of my friends in America who are Trump supporters, I voted for him. I think that he's done great things in America and here in general. But there are things that concern me deeply, and he is in his second term. And I've had these conversations with Christian friends. It seems like he's less interested in the evangelical voter base because a lot of the statements that he's been making recently are not in line with what I know my Christian friends believe and those who voted for him and supported him very actively. George, again, I was saddened by the Nova Festival October 7th survivor who took his own life. Yeah. Nothing shall break. There already is peace. Nothing can stop it, Jonathan. I don't know what that means. There isn't peace. There is not peace. Israel has never had a day of peace. God wants peace. Okay, I accept that. I'm reading the comments. Hamas and their ilk feel like the Hydra to me. I don't know what that reference is, Paul. Cut off one head and two more rise up. How can we overcome the evil worldview of so many of our Arab neighbors? I pray for a Christian revival where many Gazans and West Bank Arabs give their life to Jesus. So Paul, George, excuse me, that's your comment. Everyone, please go to solutionforpeaceingaza.com, share it. I'm speaking very candidly. I'm going to speak super candidly with all of you right now. I said it before, God's funny. Why did he give me this vision, and why would he burn it into my heart to pursue this as much as I have. I've also been threatened over it in very, very unpleasant ways, which has caused me to back down from being the active advocate of it. But I'm going to say something else. And I challenge all of my Christian friends who are watching or listening, with very little exception. As much as everyone wanted to see the solutionforpeaceingaza.com plan implemented along the lines of what George noted, no consequential donations to make this radical plan possible came through. And I'm not a stupid person. I came up with a very solid plan. Far too many people like to talk about what you wrote, George, but praying for a Christian revival or changing of hearts. And too few people, to my shock, were prepared to roll up their sleeves and do something. And that may be an oversimplification, but I'm gonna stick with it to be provocative. Dave Garmus, Israel and the U.S. put more value on life than the terrorists. That's correct. John Haller, I'm promoting you to panelist. I'll introduce you as soon as you're on. Hopefully, yeah, someone raised their hand. Let me see who's raising their hand with a question. I don't see who raised their hand. John's here. Great. If any of you have any other questions, first of all, I hope that this has been helpful, folks. I really hope that it's that this has been a enlightening conversation, an honest, sobering, realistic conversation. John, I mentioned John Haller a few minutes ago. What day was it, John? Thursday, we got to meet up with your group. Here in my neighborhood in Kfar Etzion, and I want to invite people to come. John is a pastor. John is a journalist, has a great, great following. Every time John profiles me on his platforms or introduces me to somebody, there's always a positive dividend from that, John, and I'm always grateful for that. But John's a great thinker, and I love the fact that on Thursday I was able to meet up with his group here, squeezing what, half an hour into their very busy schedule, standing in the parking lot answering questions as we did. The first thing that John gets credit for is thanks, and everyone who's part of his group, just for being here right now. It's not an easy time when you were recruiting people to come here, it was not an easy time to recruit people to come here. And now the people who are here at one of the most historic times in the history of the modern state. John's a great thinker. He has his hand on the pulse of so many things. I can't count on my two hands the number of times I get text messages from John saying, hey, did you see this? And often it's something that I haven't seen before. So I want to invite John, before you do, is there one other question? Because I'm going to close that. Yes, Paul, you do need to be in touch, and we need to see you. And I want to see you when I'm in the States on my next trip in November, December. And anyone who was here, November, December, I'm in this U.S. for about a month, and February, March. So please be in touch if you'd like to arrange for me to speak in Victoria. I'm looking forward to you joining, and I'm very excited you and your group are coming, and we're going to have a great day picking olives together on the 26th, 27th? I don't remember, but it's on the calendar. Anyway, John, I not only am I know smarter than you, you're much smarter than I am. But you have a broad perspective from your position in Ohio and your ministry, but you're here on the ground. So I'd love for you just to share some observations of your own, and as we always do at the end of these programs, to close us in prayer.
Certainly. Let me know if my audio is not good, but it is hard for me to put in words what I and the group of wonderful people who chose to accompany me to Israel on this tour have experienced in the last 3 days. Wednesday, we went to the Gaza Envelope. We went to the Nova Festival Memorial Site. I remember seeing the poster of the young lady whose boyfriend took his own life just within the last 24 hours. It was hard to grasp the scope of what we saw. Meeting with families there, we then went to Kfar, I'm not sure if I'm saying it correctly, the kibbutz Kfar Aza,
yep.
Where we walked through the homes of people who had been brutally murdered that day, and then also standing at the fence looking into Gaza and hearing the sort of final explosions of things being cleared in there. We then went to Sutter Road and met with the widow at the grave of her husband, who was the first police officer killed in Sutter Road on October 7th. The next day we went to, I don't want to go too long, but this is so, it has moved me so much. I almost can't express in words, but the next day we went to Hebron to the Tomb of the Patriarchs, where there was a great celebration going on because of the holiday. 40,000 Orthodox Jews coming to Hebron that day. It was unbelievable. We then walked King David Street up to the, I think it's called the Hadassah House, where they memorialized the 1929 Hebron massacre of Jews for the same reason that Jews were killed and others killed on October 7th, the exact same reason. And there's just this complete, I think I told my group, I don't think you understand that we are here at a time of convergence of epic, historic, theological, biblical, prophetic events happening all right in front of us. And that today we were down at the Israel Museum by the Knesset, and I posted on my Facebook page that Monday, that place will be the epicenter of the world as things are discussed. And that is biblical and prophetic, and I have a lot more thoughts of that. We could go for a long time, but I think we need to be very humble, circumspect, in viewing these things with a biblically informed, geopolitical, prophetic perspective. And by the way, Thursday night we went to the Hallelujah light show at the City of David, a show about Hezekiah, I'm sorry, is Nehemiah, projected on the wall of Nehemiah in the City of David. The convergence of these things is so much difficult. And I know there's a verse in Nehemiah 8, verse 17, that talks about the captives being freed on Sukkot. And we're possibly watching that. So it's a very incredibly significant time and humbling to be here to share that with you. And I appreciate you stopping by the group right after we had watched the movie, The History of Gush Etzion. It's, again, all of these themes being the same everywhere we went, but also the hope that we saw everywhere also. So if I could, let's just close in a word of prayer.
Yep.
Lord, we just come to you with humble hearts. We pray that you will give us wisdom, guidance, and understanding of the events that are unfolding in front of us, that will hold our leaders in all of our countries accountable for making the right decisions at this time. Lord, I especially pray for the families of the hostages and the victims of October 7th, and the people who remember prior events like the Hebron massacre in 1929. We pray that you will comfort them in a way that only you can. We pray that we would always look to you for guidance in all of these things. Bless our time together. In his name we pray, amen.
Amen. Thank you, John. Thank you, everybody, for joining.
I'll probably today yet have the link on the YouTube and glad to share this with you, but it'll be out later. And I encourage you to share this, but things will be changing. I wanted to give you a pulse. I'm hoping a hand on the pulse of what's going on here now. As we always wrap up the podcasts, and as a way of thanking everyone for participating, we have a special program that we've been doing for most of the last 200 episodes. It's called From Jonathan's Bookshelf. It's an incentive to get you to like, comment, or share the link to this program with other people. And what we've been doing is we pick a person at random every month who either likes, comments, or shares the link to this, and you get a free book. The book that we've been giving out since, I believe, September of 2023 is our book, the book that we published, The Remarkable, Stunning Israel the Miracle. It's a $75 value. So I encourage you all to like, copy, and definitely comment and definitely share this. We're always grateful that the podcast is sponsored by our friends at the Willow Run Greenhouse in Culpeper, Virginia. Please, if you're ever in the area, pop in to thank them for helping make conversations like this possible. And also special thanks to our friends, the Coyne family, as well for their meaningful sponsorship. Inspiration from Zion and all of the Genesis 123 Foundation programs are made possible by donations. So please consider joining us to help continue the dialogue and build bridges. Someone very generously and anonymously texted me over Shabbat asking if they could sponsor this in prayerful honor of the return of the hostages. So I pray that by the time most people are following this, that all the hostages will be returned. And thank you for that sponsorship. If you'd like to sponsor a future episode in honor or memory of a loved one or special occasion, please be in touch at inspirationfromzion@gmail.com. We'd always love to hear your comments as well, as we've done today. And as part of a dialogue, especially relating to conversations about traditional Judaism for our Ask the Rabbi programs, please share this with others who will also find it of interest and continue to join us right here as we bring you more meaningful conversations about unique topics relating to Israel that you won't hear anywhere else. Wherever you are in the world, I pray that you and your loved ones are all safe and healthy. And I send my blessings from right here in the Judean Mountains. God bless you.